If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Welcoming my colleague of many years, Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State, and longtime with the Wall Street Journal editorial board. We turn now to the politics of the moment. The Democratic National Convention meeting in Chicago to say farewell to President Biden and to welcome Vice President Harris as the lead on the ticket. What does this mean for foreign policy? That's a question I've asked Europe. And now I come to Mary Kissel, who's been inside those rooms with the State Department visits over the years. And the puzzle about a new American president comes up every now and again. We have frequent elections. Europe scratches its head and settles in and tries to figure out, does this mean NATO will be supported? Does this mean the EU will be supported? Does this mean the trade barriers will be raised or lowered? And what is to be done with this new unknown American president? It's happened before. It'll happen again. Right now, the curiosity is about Vice President Harris. Mary, a very good evening to you. The Democratic National Committee and the convention, there are two wars underway. One, a very hot war in Russia right now, an attack by the Ukrainian forces, and an equally hot war in the Donetsk Oblast, an advance by the Russian forces. In addition, we have the constant reminder that Hezbollah is raining death upon North Israel, and Hamas is always looking to shoot rockets and cut throats in Gaza, in addition to the lingering threat from the Ayatollah and Hezbollah. And yet, I do not hear clarity about the Democratic National Convention's intentions for foreign policy and its chief candidate. So I'm asking everyone, Mary. Europe says that Harris is a tabula rasa. She's been in power for 4 years. What can we assume will be a Harris foreign policy, the same as or different than Joe Biden? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. Well, we can derive some hints from the positions that President Biden took when Kamala Harris was his vice president, because she hasn't voiced to date any real break from those policies. And those policies were similar to the Obama view of the world, which is that the exercise of American power is not necessarily a good thing, that we have to accommodate rising powers like China and Iran, and that we should put diplomacy first when it comes to resolving disputes. Of course, you know, I'm making broad generalizations, John. The Biden administration did continue many of the Trump administration's tougher policies on Beijing, but they did a real 180 on Tehran, and they distanced themselves from some of our traditional allies, particularly in the Middle East, namely Israel and our partners in Saudi Arabia. So the other clue that you can look at is the 2024 Democrat Party platform, which states very clearly, quote, "The United States strongly supports Israel in the fight against Hamas." So in that respect, it makes it sound as if we are on Israel's side. But when you listen to the rhetoric coming out of the DNC, and again, this is not coming from Vice President Harris's mouth itself, There's a lot of moral equivalence. President Biden, for instance, just last night said, quote, a lot of innocent people are being killed on both sides in regards to the Gaza war, in many ways making a moral equivalence between the terrorists that, you know, have gotten people killed by hiding behind civilians and democratic Israel that had more than 1,000 people killed, raped, murdered, maimed. We'll see. What we haven't had is a series of definitive statements from Vice President Harris herself. And that's likely because the top issues in this election for many Americans doesn't revolve around foreign policy. It revolves around economic issues, inflation in particular, as well as immigration and crime. So I think it's she's something of a black box herself, but I think that the context in which she's operated and the party to which she belongs to can give us hints about the direction of her foreign policy, her likely direction.
We say immigration, we say illegals, we say undocumented. There are lots of euphemisms. There are refugees from the global south coming through the Darien Gap across the border in Texas and California. Europe, they cross in across the Mediterranean to Italy or across the English Channel to England. They also cross in from Turkey into Greece and then proceed into the EU. Immigrants. It's a huge story in Europe. I know because I've talked to Berlin many times about this. It's a resounding vote getter if you're against immigration, hence the rise of populist parties. We don't have one populist party. We have populism in both major parties. We're looking at the Democrats here. And we talk about foreign policy for Harris, and Europe regards Harris, and this is a good thing, as a tabula rasa. In other words, a blank slate to be determined. And that's not meant as a hostile remark, because Europe, generally speaking, is very wary of a second Trump term. However, I come back to the global south as another way of talking about immigrants coming from Cuba or coming from Venezuela or in the European part of view, coming from Syria or Morocco or the Sahel. So do we presume, Mary, in any fashion that the Democratic Party and the Democratic president, should Ms. Harris win, are disposed to the Global South, will emphasize the Global South, will integrate the Global South? How will it regard immigration going forward?
Well, we've heard tougher rhetoric from the Democrat Party, I think in large part because former President Trump and the Republican Party have succeeded in highlighting the massive surge at our southern border and the danger that poses to Americans across the country. Because, of course, many of these people are what's called so-called gotaways, where they evade border patrol. Others are simply allowed into the country with minimal checks. We've had many people on the terror watch list detained, but who knows, who's gotten through the border. And so as that issue has risen in importance to American voters, the Democrat Party has gotten tougher on their rhetoric, and they've also taken to blaming Republicans for not getting a fix through Congress, which is a bit misleading, of course, because President Trump achieved a much safer border through agreements with Mexico and our Central American allies, as well as taking what was allowed within his executive authority to close that border. It's not just one thing that's going to fix it. It's a suite of measures. So I think it's a deep vulnerability for Kamala Harris. I think Republicans are working hard to highlight the raw numbers and facts. If it changes votes, I don't know. But I think that it is a major issue. And in terms of Kamala Harris's views on what's called the Global South, although I don't really like that terminology because many of these nations are very different from one another across continents, even if they all reside in the Southern Hemisphere. The Democrat Party has a lot more philosophically in common with, for instance, the ANC in South Africa than the Republican Party does, has much more in common with Lula in Brazil than the Republican Party does, has much more in common with Maduro in Venezuela than the Republican Party does. That's not necessarily a good thing, but it may prevent them from taking the kind of tough measures that need to be taken to prevent a further erosion of deterrence in places like Venezuela. I mean, look at Biden's record there. He lifted sanctions. We're still complaining about the rigged election, although we're not doing anything to exact any consequences for it. And we reopened and allowed Chevron and other energy companies to start producing there again, giving revenue to the government. So it's not a great record. But again, I think we should reserve judgment until we hear the candidate herself give her definitive statement, on these matters.
Yes, these are the last days of the tabula rasa. So one more. Preparation for the war in the Indo-Pacific. It's underway in all the services I spoke of. I've spoken about the Air Force preparation. The Navy is commonplace. The Marine Corps remaking itself to anticipate the attack by the People's Republic of China's PLA, Army, Navy, and Air Force. The attack to overwhelm Taiwan, but also to neutralize or destroy the resistance from Japan, the Philippines, Australia, all of this on this vast map. I'm unaware that Vice President Harris has said anything specific about preparation for war. There is the statement that is true that Ms. Harris was in the room for the decisions made by the Biden administration over these last years. So do you see any significant indication or hint that the preparation will continue or not continue? I'm talking about the industrialized base, building up the fleet, repositioning the Air Force, and generally working our allies to prepare for the worst case scenario.
Well, again, I think we can look at the Biden record and prior to that, the Obama record, because many of the people who served in senior positions in those administrations would likely have jobs in the Harris administration, although not all. And we can generally say that those administrations preferred to spend U.S. taxpayer money on domestic initiatives, on remaking America, whether it was President Obama vis-a-vis healthcare or President Biden lavishing money on green initiatives. Vice President Harris seems to have similar instincts. The few specific policy issues that she's discussed, for instance, include a generous child tax credit, subsidizing first-time homeowners, although that's also a little misleading. I think that if you look at the details, if you rented for 3 years, you'd be considered a first-time homeowner. And so it's just tax and spend. It's an old formula at the expense of building up our military. And it's interesting, John, that we've seen bipartisan alarm bells sounded on Capitol Hill about the deterioration in our position in the Pacific, for instance, given China's incredibly fast, naval buildup, their Air Force buildup, their development of asymmetric weaponry, their development of space weapons. We are facing a very formidable foe, and they're developing systems that are aimed squarely at the U.S. military, not at defending the mainland and not at projecting regional power. It's aimed at us. And so, one would hope that if, Kamala Harris does win, and I'm not sure that she will, John, I'm not sure I'm on that bandwagon. I think there are a lot of silent, quiet Trump supporters out there, and we have a ways to go, including debates. So I wouldn't jump to the conclusion that just because Kamala Harris got a bump in the polls and reclaimed some traditional Democrat votes that she's going to win. But one would hope that if she did win and she got into office, that when briefed on the severity of this threat, that she might change positions. The challenge is that for any party, Republican or Democrat, to rebuild our military, we have to tackle entitlement reform, because that is the single biggest outlay of the U.S. federal government. And neither party is talking about that anymore. We're kind of, closing our eyes and putting our fingers in our ears and, hoping against hope that, things like Social Security just happen not to go bankrupt in a couple of years, but it will. So it seems like we're rolling toward a fiscal crisis here in the United States and not doing anything about it just at the time when our enemies are surging forward in their military buildups. That's very dangerous.
Mary Kissel, we're going to turn to the other part. I'm John.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it, your neighbors know it, heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs, in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.